Alors, étant donné que la présentation de Samuel va être en anglais, je vais peut-être la donner deux, trois éléments dessus. Donc Samuel va nous présenter une politique de développement durable qui ont été mises en place dans la ville de Fribourg en Allemagne, ville que vous savez qui est considérée à l'échelle internationale comme l'un des modèles de développement durable. Il va développer une approche critique de la production des politiques de développement durable à Fribourg en montrant finalement que la construction d'un consensus a été utilisé comme une stratégie politique visant à dépolitiser le développement durable et à confiner les décisions politiques à des espaces, à des arènes qui se situent en dehors du débat. Donc je vais laisser la parole à Samuel, qui va nous présenter ça pendant une demi-heure, approximativement. Okay.
Okay, thank you for introduction, and thank you for the very nice invitation here, and I apologize for not speaking French. I tried to learn it twice and I failed. try to speak slowly, please interrupt me if it's not something is not clear or you can't, you have any questions. I'm trying to talk about Freiburg for a specific reason, because I used to live in the very north of Germany until 2010 at the University of Kiel, and then I got a job offer at Freiburg, and everybody said, "Oh, so you're so lucky, you go to the beautiful green city Freiburg." And I asked them back, "Have you been there?" And they said, "No, but I heard it's a very beautiful city, and it's the warmest city in Germany, and it's a green city." And they had these small imaginations. Do you have a pointer or something?
Yes.
So you can see the first picture over there, very close to the Black Forest. So, thank you very much. You can see it very close to the Black Forest. Well, I tell you, you cannot see it very well, but I tell you. It's kind of a historical city, there are many bicycles and solar panels on the roof of the, on top of the roofs. So I went there and I tried, that's interesting. I tried to discover this, and I think that's an important starting point for doing research, just to understand the own positionality of why are we doing something. So I got the job offer, but I also got interested in things. And I just noticed, and I was reading something, and that's not chronologically right, that Freiburg won at the Sustainia 100. That was during the Rio 20 Plus. So the Sustainia 100, I didn't know what it is. It is just a kind of an organization run by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And during the Rio 20 Plus conference, they said Freiburg will win. It's one of the most sustainable cities, next to cities like Copenhagen, Curitiba, Guangzhou, Kissimmee, Malmö, and Oslo. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Obviously, it's very green. And then I noticed something else. And so Lord Mayor here, that they won another award. This time was on Nikolaus, 6th December. They won a sustainable city in the category of cities. There was a category of products, and Procter & Gamble won it for Pampers. So, good company. And then this guy, this Lord Mayor, said, oh, he got asked why is Freiburg a green city, or why is it possible to have all these green policies? They said, well, that's the active citizenry. It's the people there that pushes him, that convince him, that constrain him to be green. It's not the political, that one, that he's kind of innocent, it's just the people want it. They want to really focus on the civil society. And then I noticed that there was an expo in Shanghai in 2010, so 2 years before the other event. And Freiburg was there with the pavilion. And also the Vauban neighborhood, which might be, somebody might know, it is one of the green eco-quartier at Freiburg. It's called after Vauban because the French army was there before, and then they left in the 90s. Well, southern Germany was liberated by the French. So, I noticed there's this very successful branding of Freiburg as a green city. And the whole world understands that
that fire was green. So I got interested, what does it mean exactly? What is it about, this green? And I noticed also the city itself as a an institution, an organization, which is really high under the Lord Mayor, that says, that promotes green activities, green policy. Again, so this is the Nachhaltigkeitsmanagement. And and of course they are convinced that Flamingen is Germany's most sustainable city, and last, just recently I met a scholar from Vancouver, and he said, well, there's the Lord Mayor in Vancouver who wants to become Vancouver the greenest city in the world. I said, well, that's not possible, it's us already, sorry. And so we noticed that Freiburg really plays well in this international competition. And then the research question was, what is beyond that competing, that kind of competition? What is really going on there? And so I was looking on the literature as well. And one of the most famous literatures is Timothy Beattie, who wrote this Resilient Cities book. You might be familiar with that. You can see here this, the Cathedral of Freiburg, which is, by the way, not very clear to me why he has chosen a cathedral, a very Catholic symbol for a resilient city. So, well, anyway. And he was writing these sentences, what does a resilient city look like? Bike paths, virtually car-free streets that lead from solar homes to grocery stores, organic grocery stores, of course. Recreation areas, parks, or free tram to reach places too far to walk or bike. A solar office block filled with new sixth-wave businesses. Schools with parents lined up on bikes, not in cars, to pick up kids instead of waiting in idling cars. A local farmer's market buying bioregional produce. This is common scene in Vermont. And just there I got noticed, well, I read this and I said, okay, something's strange here, because I'm paying €2.30 for my tram ticket. And he's talking about free tram. So I went on in the literature. This is actually not a very academic literature. This is kind of a, well, you can find it somewhere. It's talking about a blueprint for sustainability. It refers to Freiburg and specifically to Vauban again. And he just said, checked into my hotel, zero emission, of course. By the way, we have the greenest hotel in the world in Freiburg. I didn't know this when I booked. It's a Best Western, by the way, and it costs €170 single room. I didn't know this when I booked, as well as using solar thermal energy and wood pellet burning for heat and hot water and blah, blah, blah. And they said, welcome to Solar City Freiburg, where a sense of community buy-in to sustainable living is tangible. And it's again the residents. It's again about civil society. So at that point I noticed, and I was very naive at the beginning, that competitions confirm that Freiburg is green, academics do as well, so it must be true, right? And then famous Charles Landry wrote about the art of city making. And of course he mentions Freiburg as well, Curitiba with Freiburg in Germany, as a forerunner in its concern for ecological urban development, a forerunner, a model or something. So I got interested in that, and I was trying to ask what is beyond all that? What is on the political level? What does it have for implications for the people who live here? I'm confused between these two. renowned as an innovator again, and so on. We are just 225,000 inhabitants. It's really a small number. Most of them are students. It's a very small city in the Upper Rhine Valley in the south of Germany. Not too far, just 1 hour from Strasbourg. We are nearly neighbors. And car use, he writes, has remained stable over 30 years. And as wrong as Beattie was writing as a free term system, as wrong it is to write car use has remained stable over 30 years, is car ownership. So I noticed the literature is really dealing with, in a very superficial way, with these cities. Why? Why is it? And what consequences result from it? And having a perspective from, I'm a geographer, and I have a perspective as a critical geography, or a critical geography perspective. So my analysis today is not about only about the, it's about the politicization or the depoliticization of Freiburg as a green city, or what goes along with the sustainable urban development. And I think literature, and academic, particularly academic literature, plays a very important role in that. Another one is by Fulham Putcher, or Pruger, I don't know where it comes from. And it's just, they state that their social equity is high since all parts of the city are easily accessible by public transport, cycling, walking. And all parts of the city is not true. There are some neighborhoods which are excluded by the tram system. So it's not covering all. Neither outline the relationship between public transport system and social equity, nor defining what is understood accessible. So what does he really mean by this? And how does it belong to that whole sustainability image? Since many neighborhoods of the city and hinterland are not at all well connected to public transport and central functions. Another one is other publications mention the high proportion of bicycles in the city, which is actually true. There are a lot of bicycles. I'm always walking as a way of performing resistance, daily resistance. As a symbol for sustainability, equating it to safe and livable environments, they say the few cities that had that do provide good infrastructure for cyclists are the safest for cyclists, pedestrians, and cars. For example, Amsterdam, Fribourg began in Copenhagen. That was Cochrane. An official statistics attest Fribourg the highest numbers of bicycle accidents. It is not safe, and I can tell you it is more probable that you get injured by a bicycle than by a car. So it's bicycle, trams, and car. Actually, this is the threat daily. So I noticed that also the academic literature is talking in a very specific way about all these green cities. And we could do the same analysis, short analysis I just did here for the beginning of my talk, probably with Vancouver, definitely with Guangzhou, and probably also with Copenhagen or Amsterdam or whatever, or Paris. So if you go to the to this idea of modelizing, of identifying indicators of a sustainable city, it is probably Roseland that comes to our minds. Mark Roseland has written twice the same stuff, exactly the same thing, word by word, he wrote twice this book, which is very readable and an interesting book, and also an article. And he identifies actually these 10 principles that says it's compact, diverse, green, safe, again, peasant, and visual mixed-use communities. Communities play an important role. So I notice it's not really about technology, what they say. It's not really alone about carbon footprints. It is also about the social, the community. We're all happy. And so on. Goes on with other things. And I noticed that, well, and if I went then on, so I'm just telling you how I developed into this, how I dived into that material, is that I noticed we have a sustainable urbanism Freiburg charter, which has been developed by the city of Freiburg and the Institute of Urbanism. And if you look at that guiding principles, which is really making Freiburg mobile, to mobilize that idea of Freiburg to send it somewhere else to other cities who can then become as sustainable as Freiburg is as well. We see it's again tolerance, these aspects. City of neighborhoods, short distance, okay, that's clear, public transport as well, that makes but it's also about education, it is also about, yeah, participation plays an important role, all these things. So I noticed at that point, and that was really an easy entrance maybe, it is on the one hand the literature really developing a very strange imagination of Freiburg. It was my colleagues and friends in Kiel who said, without being there, having that imagination. And we also, this imagination can be abstracted, can be put into a model. And this model includes the ecology or the ecological points, like, of course, a smaller footprint, carbon footprint, but it is also very much connected to the social. And there's a Freiburg consensus about this. If you go around, I will tell you how this consensus developed. Everybody agrees that Freiburg is a green city. Nobody takes that into question. It is stated in literature. We have these principles. The principles are there. It works. It's a green city. It's a consensus. And the idea for me was then how did this consensus in society start to be there? And what is on the other side of that consensus? What does it exclude? So the consensus, and that is actually the result, so to speak, of my analysis, has four dimensions. There's a moral dimension, which I will then show you. We'll go into three examples. There's an economical dimension of a sound green economy. There's a technical dimension of very productive solar panels, for instance, or wind parks, or whatever. So in our case, it's definitely solar panels. And there's this, what I said before, this very important social dimension, which is about diversity, safety, tolerance. That's all in that Freiburg Charter. And there's evidence also for it. People refer to something and say, here it is, here's tolerance. We can see it in Vauban. The whole started, and I think it's very important for understanding how what's possible to have this consensus started in 74, 75. And you might have seen this picture here before. I saw it at least in some of the very few demonstrations in Japan just a couple of years ago. It's dialect. Called Nihamaxite, and that was when all these farmers from the local wine production region on the Upper Rhine Valley, they were against the construction of the nuclear power plant. There was the German Länderlevel, the Baden-Württemberg government, and the French government who wanted to industrialize the Upper Rhine Valley, which was until then not very industrialized. There was Basel, the pharmaceutical industry, but between Mannheim and Basel there was nothing. So the French built Fessenheim, and this is actually one of the very French strategies to put the nuclear power plants in the border. Very interesting. And we wanted to construct Wehe. And then there was the farmers who were against that. They were against that because they were not for sustainability reasons, as it is mentioned if you talk to people today, just because they were afraid that the cooling towers of the nuclear power plant, of that plant, produce more clouds, and the wine becomes worse. And we had a very dramatic wine catastrophe, because there was a small animal eating all the wine. So that was the starting point. Then some academics from the university came, and they merged, and then it became really a movement. And it's an interesting thing, this was a trans-border movement, including the French people, and they could talk together, not by speaking French, German, because they had this dialect, which is very similar. And these old people, they communicate, still communicate. And many people, just until today, probably, also in the Alsace, they speak kind of French. It's a dialect, actually. It's not a kind of, probably also kind of French, kind of German. It's actually a dialect. And there was then the authorities who spoke German or French, probably German, and they couldn't understand really because it's really, this is called Nihamaxite. And I would say, nein, haben wir gesagt. So it's very different, so we cannot understand each other. So that was a starting point. And if we reanalyze this, then I think this is kind of these typical grassroots environmentalism, which I'm really drawing, in this case, from your article, which I really liked, because it's really fitting into that idea of neoliberalization of sustainable urban development. It's actually grassroots environmentalism that's started the whole thing, and we shouldn't ignore that. These graphs, if we talk about environmental neoliberalization. If you talk to people today, and I was just a couple of months at a meeting, there was this famous solar architect, Rolf Disch, and he said, I'm doing a solar architect, but no, he presented himself as, before he said his name, he said, I was in Wehe in the 70s demonstrating. And then he said, then I became a solar architect. And there was another one in the planning, he said, I was demonstrating in Wehe. So I was on the good side. So really they are legitimizing their today's actions by referring back to these movements. But these movements were not about sustainable urban development as we understand it today. That was at the beginning about the cooling tower, nothing else, wine production. Wine is not too bad, by the way. Not like French wine. So it was not really aimed at sustainability, and you can easily see this in all the songs and all the poems and all the protocols they were developing. That was really about authorities. It was not about sustainability. But they used this. They used it to legitimize politics, actors, and what I call, or we can call, the green growth machine. Another example, that's a second example, is that famous Vauban neighborhood, where after the French army has left in 1994, the Vauban district has been planned. First, there were a few squatters, they occupied that place, and then the city said, okay, let's do something, otherwise it's all squatted and all occupied. And they developed these, as you can see here, the solar settlement. Rolf Disch is the architect, I mentioned him before, who was demonstrating in Biel. Just doing these. So plus energy. They produce more energy than they consume. This is very good. Or we have these Baugruppen, these are all passive standard buildings, and people came together really talking to each other, and that was really a bottom-up participatory process. And we have then these sixth-wave businesses, as you read before in the article of, do you remember that Tim Wheatley book? He refers to that building. So it's a very green city, it's a very green neighborhood, and it's really, yeah, here it is, by the way. Just here outside of the city, that's in the city center. You can read it differently. There's a typical idea of privatization, of giving the whole sustainability politics to a very wealthy middle class. It is kind of a ghetto today. If you go there, it's very homogeneous. Just we made some interviews with people living here, it's 50 buildings. And it's very rare to find somebody without a PhD. So if you don't have a PhD, you're socially excluded. You're poor. So this is actually the solar satellite. And if you have a deeper look at it, it's very interesting, because we're before told that sustainable urban development contributes to a very sound green economy, or to a very sound economy. This is actually doing 6% return of investment. And just tell me a bank where you get 6% back every year. I think we are around, at least in Germany, about 1% or something. Not very. But it has also a 10% increase of rent. And who was financing them? That was a bit of sport. Do you know the chocolate? Mm-hmm. The small? Yeah. They're doing a lot of money with that now. And it is they're actively displacing, they're calling people, asking them whether they are able to pay for this. There was 110 square meter buildings, actually this one here, there were two tenants living there. And the owner tried to sell it at 740,000 euros. And then the contract was made by 695 between two parties, we don't know the other party. In the meantime, the tenant said, okay, I'm leaving. I'm getting no ownership. I don't know who will be my landlord or landlady, so I'm leaving. And just after they left, they didn't sell it anymore. So today they sold it again for 690,000 euros for 110 square meters. That's an incredible price for Freiburg. Probably not for Paris, but incredible for Freiburg at least. So they're displacing people. And of course they are displacing, oh, there's a migration, there's one Canadian and one Swiss family. This is all about social mixture. It is technically ineffective, by the way, because the solar panels the first 2 years didn't work. They didn't produce because the AC-DC changer didn't work. And it's ineffective. And I was just asking the administrator of the technical if it's a good, sustainable thing. And he said, yes and no. I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody. So you can do it. But it's ineffective. And we noticed that there's a narrative about this very model, about these very sound developments, and we have the daily practices where we notice, yeah, it's car-free, by the way, and one of the narratives is car-free neighborhood. This is what we often see there. So I just made this photo, just a document, and these are not people who live there, these are people who come to the organic supermarket there and buy their store, their things there. So, there's a narrative of this model of solar settlement and Vauban, and we have daily practices who speak really different language. It's really a normal neighborhood and upper middle class neighborhood. Another thing where this becomes very obvious how different the reality is we have this, can we say that these are kind of mobile people who live in these trailers here, kind of alternative lifestyles. And then there's a book it's called Freiburg Green City. And in order to underline the tolerance aspect, the city of Freiburg was making a picture here of this. I said, we are so tolerant, we have this. And then in August 2011, just in the morning, around 4 a.m., I saw there's a photo, there's kind of a Molotov cocktail or something, just a little fire. And because police was evacuating these trailer parks. Why did they do so? Because somebody was told there's a Swiss investor. So in South Germany, if you need an evil person, it's always a Swiss, a rich Swiss person. So a Swiss investor who wants to build a hotel. Later we noticed it's not a Swiss people, it's the city. And it's the city Stadtbau, which is responsible for, or was responsible for social housing. So now they transform from social housing to being an investor, a hotel investor. But it's a green city hotel, of course. And even more important, there are 5 handicapped people living there, they're working there, so it's a very socially inclusive thing. Even though only 2 of the rooms are accessible 100% for handicapped people. And I think this is really the other part of the coin which we really see today and really contradicts the whole idea of modelizing. And the interesting thing is that we talk about that consensus, nobody's talking about this, what's going on there. Everybody's talking about these narratives as, well, it's a model, it's that reproduces something. We are green, we are sustainable cities. And not really. And there must be a reason for this, why nobody resists against it, why there's no movement, or also these people here who try to do something really are not successful in contradicting this politics. Another example is, this is a very common European scene where you have these neighborhoods which are in the periphery of Freiburg. It's a large-scale housing area for social housing. And this building was running out of that rent control, so it was not social housing anymore. Freiburg Stadtbau again, the same investor of the Green City Hotel, who owns also this one, he said, let's renovate it, let's retrofit it. And of course, we in Freiburg, we make it green. So we transform it worldwide the first time into a passive standard building. So from this one here to this one here. It's called Boogie 50, because it's Boogingerstraße. And what we see is that it's on the one hand passive standard, it is the first time that the sustainable urban development comes to so-called deprived neighborhoods, the peripheries or something. And it's part of the whole program of the neighborhood, which is called Weingarten. On the other hand, we see this is really where the city acts as an investor, as a neoliberal actor, like also in the case of the Green City Hotel. The Stadtbau enhances the rents a lot. There's no social housing anymore. The 10th floor, since a few months, is reserved for guest professors. And I think guest professors are really not the one who have to live in social housing. I mean, they are enough. Only 4 of the families who live there returned. And while there was in this building participation process, in the 3rd and the 4th and the 5th building, there was no participation anymore. Because the argumentation was, oh, we did it in the first case, so we don't need it anymore. We have participation. So we can understand what's going on in Freiburg, or the Freiburg modelization, as a form of green modelization. It starts with this grassroots environmentalism and comes to consensus mainstream. So here was really a fight probably going on, where people were resisting against. And today we have a consensus, that's all good. So we had these movements maybe, we don't have it anymore, because part of these movements become the party. I mean, that was the real event here, was one of the foundational movements, the German Green Party, who is in power in Freiburg. They were claiming for a human city against dehumanized industrial city and so on, that was all in the 70s. Today we have that reduced to marketing instruments, deeply integrated in these daily urban politics. And it is, was considered to detach the social and ecological dimension from the economy. What we today have is economy first, and then probably a very perverted form of the social. So it used to be radical and controversial, and today it's consensus. And we then, and that was a talk Gordon McLeod gave at the RC21, I think was it a new session, maybe?
Yeah.
And I really like the sentence, he said, consensus is the problem to democracy and not the answer to democracy's problems. So it's really, that's a problem. We have to deal not with transforming our cities into green cities, but when we do so, about the consensus and the implementation, or the impact for today's democracy. And I think it's particularly helpful for me in order to understand better, to conceptualize what was going on there, and how we can understand this, is to draw on the idea or the reconceptualization of the political, which in German we would write with a capital P. And I really liked, even if it's controversial, the ideas of Jacques Rancière, who says that it is very important to focus, and that's actually my understanding of Rancière, probably you will disagree with that, but he was really arguing that on there's consensus on the one hand refers to an exclusion on the other hand. And consensus is kind of a police control order, and there's something outside of this order. So the order is about taking borders, and the borders around Bourbon. And the borders now around Boogie 50. And there are some people who don't fit into that. So he distinguishes, as many other people, and partly it's also helpful to probably to read, you can also probably read Chantal Mouffe for this. I mean, it's not my eyes, it's very complementary, not that contradictory. And Eric Zwingli does this a lot, between the political on the one hand and the police order on the other hand. So what we have is a consensual police order today. We don't have the radical political anymore. We don't have movements and fiber who contradict there. Why don't they contradict? Because the people who do, who construct the consensus, and I'm coming back on the beginning of my talk, they can legitimize because they have the moral legitimation. They demonstrated against the, they demonstrated in the 70s. They were on the good side. It's economically sound. It's ecologically good. It's social inclusive. I mean, 5 handicapped people work in a hotel. That's good. So it's really hard to focus against us. There's no room for debate, for fighting. So it's really difficult to disturb the social order and fighting. We don't have any forces anymore who can disturb this. So we need, this is all we have. And it's really, I mean, this is really demonstrating how this order works. You can try to lie there, but at the end, it's your, yeah, I'm done. It's actually the last one. So I'm interesting to, so the question remains, who can disturb this police order? Who can be responsible? Who can be in the position to disturb it? And then Margaret Meyer, her article, I really like what she writes about that, says we need more resistant groups. And I really have the problem with that sentence, and I was discussing this with her, and because I think we cannot give this responsibility to interact now to these few alternative leftist groups in Freiburg that do exist. That's a couple of, it's a righteous city movement, it's actually very small. They're trying to do this, they have difficulties to do this. I think we need the whole society has to change. I think it's really something bigger, that's a bigger question. We cannot conclude, as Margaret in this thing, Mike, that she said we need more resistant action. Like we need 2 of them, or 3 of them. But this is actually one of the, he's not a strong person in a way. It's not like a professor who is lying on the street. Okay, this is actually where I, it's about which part of the society takes responsibility to change this. So, yeah, thank you for your attention.